exactly what direction to go. And in the end, I decided to just talk about the things that I know, what I've experienced through some years that were very, very formative for me. I won't be talking much at all about my current job. I think the jury's still out on whether I'm accomplishing anything of value besides chasing call lights, handing out warm blankets and snacks, antibiotics, narcotics, and answering 261 phone calls a day. I really can't tell you what I do at work. It's usually just a blur, but check back with me in a few years and maybe I'll know. So I was thinking this afternoon, this topic could have been sort of done in an interview style, and that might have worked better to keep me on track. But if you think of questions, you might hold on to them, and if we have some time at the end, I may entertain some of those. I want to give you just a little bit of, well, more than a little bit of background info. So EMS, or Emergency Medical Services, which is what most ambulance services in the U.S. are known as, I find it to be pretty widely misunderstood. I think the general public and the medical community alike are kind of confused about who we are and what we do. So there's multiple levels of training. The basic level, EMTs have about one semester college course, and they provide basic life support. So basic airway and breathing support, hemorrhage control, CPR, and defibrillation with AEDs. It's pretty basic. There's an intermediate level, which isn't common, but it is used in some rural areas, where with an additional semester or two, they can start IVs and give some limited medications. Paramedics have a year of prerequisites and then four semesters of college, and it's just back to back. There's no breaks, and you just go straight through it. And then it's capped off with a 500 to 700 hour internship where you're working in the field under direction of experienced paramedics. And then when you get through all that, take your state boards and hit the streets, you're licensed to provide advanced life support. So you have extensive training in all kinds of physiology, pathophysiology, medications. And that's the broad strokes. I find that a lot of people, when they think of EMS, they think of big gory accidents and a lot of traumatic calls. And interestingly, out of the top 10 calls, I just looked it up today, in Wichita, the top 10 are sick person, assist law enforcement, difficulty breathing, falls, chest pain, injury accident, transfers, subject unconscious, seizures, and overdose. So only two of those top 10 are even trauma calls, although there's some overlap. So the majority of the call is a wide variety of medical and psychiatric emergencies. And like a lot of jobs, much of what you do is very routine. The truly critical life and death calls are probably less than 5% of the volume. And in the urban setting, EMS and the emergency rooms are the primary access to healthcare that a lot of people have, especially if they don't have insurance or a primary care doctor, which is a huge chunk. And so EMS is often really serving the forgotten and the disadvantaged of society. I have often said that EMS is on the front lines of the breakdown of society. It's the tip of the spear. Any societal problem you can name, homelessness, child abuse and neglect, absentee parents, breakdown of the family and relationships, runaways, domestic violence, illegal drugs, narcotics, overdoses, alcoholism, violent crimes, elder abandonment, abuse and neglect, food insecurity, mental health and psychiatric crises, anything you can think of, EMS is there. It deals with all of us, it deals with all of those. And so in a lot of ways, EMS really becomes the catch-all to deal with the people that no one else wants to deal with, the unwanted and the unloved. One of my old supervisors, kind of tongue-in-cheek, said that we are the garbage men of society. I mean, we literally are the people that many people think if they call 911, we are obligated to come and take people away and deal with them. And so there's a lot of conflict that's just inherent to the job. People call for their family members, their spouses, their friends, or just someone who's in the wrong place at the wrong time and is maybe homeless or causing a disturbance or inconvenient, and it's pushed off onto law enforcement and EMS. You deal with these people. And so lots of times the person in question doesn't want to go to the hospital. They don't think they need to. And in reality, the ER may be a poor fit for what they need, but it's an immediate, quick fix, somewhere to send them. And so, as you can well imagine, medics get caught in the crosshairs of a lot of competing interests, I guess you could say. We also kind of get dumped on by nursing homes, doctor's offices. Anytime people feel like they're unable to address the need in question, they call us. And then, as you can imagine, when we show up at the hospital with these folks who may not really need an ER, and we get a lot of pushback from nurses and doctors, why did you bring them here? Well, it's not that simple. Sometimes people aren't physically or legally able to make their own decisions. For instance, if you make any statements about harming yourself or suicidal ideation or intent, that earns you an automatic hospital evaluation. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of conflict that's inherent to the job. And learning to manage and navigate conflict well, it's probably been one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in my years in EMS. And I was just reflecting a bit this afternoon and thinking about the irony that I seem to do this better professionally than I always do in my personal life. So there's some need for growth there. One of the things that's interesting about EMS is just how rapidly you're expected to exhibit pretty high level leadership. I mean, even as a rookie, you go on calls and you're supposed to direct a team of people caring for patients, and your ancillary agencies like the fire department and law enforcement are looking to you for expertise on what a patient needs. And so it's pretty intimidating to start with. And it really forces you to grow up pretty fast and learn effective delegation and leadership skills. And I think one of the most fascinating parts of the job is just all the people interactions. I mean, it is a people business. And so your ability to walk into a situation and start communicating with someone who's never met you often, and quickly build a rapport, gather essential information quickly, and then formulate a treatment plan, and not miss any details, you know. Those are things that are pretty daunting, and it takes a number of years to really get good at that. And you have to learn to read the room and how to communicate with all different types of people. And it's in most areas, there's some exceptions, but in most areas, EMS is very understaffed and underfunded. I don't know exactly why this has happened in this country, but the fire service and law enforcement are primarily tax funded, but EMS is funded primarily from billing to insurance and billing to patients. And that makes it really complicated because up to half of the people we take care of have no money or insurance. They may have Medicaid, but Medicaid pays about 3% of what you bill them. So if half of the folks you're taking care of really have no resources, it is not a money-making business at all. And so most services are maybe 30 to 40% tax supported. And it's like pulling teeth to get more than that out of local governments. And so there's rarely enough resources for the job. Just as an example, in Wichita, the number of staffed ambulances is the same as 2015, with about a 30,000 increase in call volume in that same time frame. So you're doing a lot more work with the same amount of people. Burnout is high, turnover is high, and the folks that stick it out are very resilient. And so just thinking a little bit about the types of people, you know, you'd ask who in the world would want to get into this. And honestly, I didn't know what I was getting into in the beginning either. Although the job became much more challenging over the years that I was in it, because we started from a better funding position and a better staffing position, and we just never kept up. Paramedics typically have the ones that go the distance have very strong communication skills. They're able to, I would put their ability to take a strong history, like to their interview skills and their ability to do a good interview, get all the facts, and then a strong physical exam, because we're sent out into the field with a stethoscope, a cardiac monitor, and that's about the extent of your diagnostic tools. No imaging, no lab with blood values. And so it comes down to your interview ability and then what you can see, hear, smell. Try not to taste anything. And putting all that information together to have a kind of a working diagnosis of what you think you're dealing with. And then it's an interesting mix because you need to have confidence in your assessment and your critical thinking, but you have to be open to new information all the time as you go along so you can modify your approach. I find the stereotype is that most medics are very type A personalities, but there certainly are some folks that are remarkably laid back and are very effective at what they do. Most medics are very idealistic. They want to solve problems. They want things to work well. They want systems to work well. And they often are employed by local government bureaucracies, which just inevitably creates a lot of frustration and disappointment and conflict. But critical thinkers, a can-do-it mentality, great at improvisation, and there is no guide or protocol for every situation you're going to encounter. And so you have to be able to think on your feet and figure out a plan. So one of the, I mentioned confidence, and it is very important. I think a lot of times it comes across to people as arrogance or ego, but it's sort of I feel like it's an occupational hazard. When you task people with quickly gathering information and making critical decisions and being confident in them, it's going to come across as a little over the top sometimes. But there certainly are big egos in the business, but in general, I find that the good medics are able to be confident and yet adaptable when they're presented with new information. I have worked with some of the finest people in the world, hands down. I have lifelong friends that I still talk with, and their compassion, their desire to serve, and their character is second to none. Some of them are believers, some are not. But yes, some of them are the finest people I know. Some are not so fine. And you're going to find that, I think, in every field. So I've been thinking about what difference does a follower of Christ bring to the job. And there's a lot of things I could highlight. And, you know, you may not be in in as intense a people serving business, but we all need to be of service. And so I thought of a number of things, and hopefully you can maybe make some applications to your work as well. A good speaker would limit himself to a few key points. I came up with 16, so hang on. I don't have a story for all of them, so relax, I guess. So how do we represent Christ well in our work? And these are some lessons I've learned and am still learning. I do not do these perfectly at all, or exclusively, but these are my aspirations. Number one, take people seriously. Start from the basis that people have needs and they're worthy of your attention, and assume that they're coming from a genuine place. Number of years ago, there was a gentleman who would call us sometimes 3 to 4 times a day. I think my record was 3 times in one shift, just me, but other crews took care of him as well. And he was very dramatic, always complaining of abdominal pain, excruciating. And it can be very easy to become cynical and jaded and just kind of gloss over people's complaints. But I always tried to do a good thorough workup and treat him the best I could. And a number of times he expressed appreciation to me that I treated him better than a lot of people. And so it's tough sometimes when you feel like people maybe have an angle or being overly dramatic or whatever the case is. But I think it's just important to take people seriously. Give everyone a clean slate. A good friend of mine, his name's Connor Bounds. His father was in law enforcement, and when Connor graduated from paramedic school, he said something to him along this line. He said, "Connor, every time you make a call, whether it's your first time with that person or the 100th time, they always get a clean slate from you. So you may have a lot of history with them, but try to set that aside and start over. And pay attention to what they're saying today." That is tough to do. Number three, listen, and listen some more. I am just often struck with how much people are just dying to have someone to listen to their story. People are very lonely. The amount of folks that don't have anyone showing them a lot of genuine interest and care is significant. And I think that most of us are not great listeners. We can always improve. We need to listen to what's being said and what's not being said, and listen to understand, not just to respond. Ask open-ended questions, try to clarify, keep the conversation going and expanding on it. I just think listening is so key. Number four, take the time and do what it takes to earn people's trust. This... This may depend on your employer, so understand your situation. But sometimes it is, if you have the opportunity, take time with people. I remember a call that I went on, and this lady had basically refused to allow her husband and her son to take care of her for over a week. And so she had laid in bed. She was covered in feces and urine. very distrustful of anyone, and refusing to go to the hospital. Clearly needed to. She was very sick. And so I talked to her for a while and finally convinced her, let's at least get you cleaned up and then we can make another decision. So we managed to get her in the shower, and we spent almost an hour just going through layer after layer after layer till we finally got her clean. And at that point, she was much more amenable. She felt better, and she did let us take her to the hospital. And I'd kind of forgotten about that call, but I had a rookie with me, and he still talks about that call to this day. Because I think, you know, the easy thing to do, you don't want to go to the hospital, sign here, we're out of here. But look at what people's needs are and take the time to meet them. Number five, be kind. If I've learned anything in working with people, it's that no one has it all together. Most people have a lot of anxieties, fears, stresses. A lot of people feel inferior. And I think a lot of conflicts come because people are living out of their pain points. And they're living out of their insecurities. And so I like the, I don't know who to credit it to, but someone said, be kind, for everyone is fighting a great battle. And I find that to be true. Number six, be curious. And this is a trap that a lot of new medics fall into, is not being curious enough. Jumping to conclusions, getting tunnel vision, and not digging deeply. And I think a healthy curiosity opens the door to learning and understanding and deeper communication. It's something that I think is important to cultivate when you're working with people. Number seven, never say, that's not my job. I think that statement just drips with entitlement and an uncaring attitude. If you can do it, do it. If you can't do it, do whatever you can to find the person, the resources they need to address the issue. And this is something that I think that my coworkers really did well at. I mean, over the years, we did a lot of bartering and bargaining with people. Hey, if we help you with these things, will you accept transport to the hospital? And this is when they clearly needed to go, but it was, I've got groceries to put away, I've got mail to bring in, I need to put the dogs out, all these things that they're worried about. I've cleaned up blood, mowed lawns, cooked a lot of meals for diabetics who needed to eat. Just anything that needed to be done to address the situation at hand. We've pulled over, changed flat tires, you know, helped people push disabled vehicles through an intersection into a parking lot. whatever needed to happen. And I think, you know, in our role as public servants, when we're in public, if we see a problem, we should do what we can to correct it. But I think as servants of Christ, when we see people in need, let's figure out how to help them and not just look the other way. Number 8, don't let the rules get in the way of taking care of people. Again, you need to know how tolerant your employer is of freelancing and coloring outside the lines. But I remember a call. A lady had she'd just broken a tooth. And so that's not something that the emergency room can really do much about. It's maybe some pain medications and a referral to a dentist. But I happen to know that there was an emergency dental clinic called Dental 911 in our neighborhood. So I Googled the number, called them real quick. They said, yeah, we can see her. We close at 6. Just make sure she gets here by then. Well, it was over a mile away, and it was, I don't know, 5:30-ish. So we're not supposed to transport anybody except to hospitals. But I knew my supervisor was fairly tolerant, so we just gave her a ride there so she'd get the care she needed. And there was plenty of other times when we maybe gave people short rides when the situation warranted. I'm not saying abuse it, but I think rules are there for a reason. But sometimes they can get in the way of doing the right thing. Communication with your bosses is always a great plan. And I was blessed to work for a lot of people who shared the same philosophy that I did, that let's do what we need to take care of people. I remember one night, a gentleman who was a quadriplegic and his motorized wheelchair was, he'd only operate it with like a mouth sensor, and he'd run out of battery, and it was 11 o'clock at night, and he was a long ways from home. So we jimmy-rigged a couple spine boards and were able to shove his scooter up in the back of the ambulance. It weighed a ton, and we took him about 5 miles home, and I gained a lot of respect for the supervisor that was on that night because that was way outside the lines, but he was willing to do what needed to be done to take care of him. Lead by example. Don't shy away from the unpleasant tasks. Be willing to get in and do what needs to be done. Many years ago, I was just a rookie, and we were dispatched to a sick call, and this gentleman had been living in his recliner for probably weeks to months, and his house was what we call a path house, because there was just a very small, narrow path through the mounds of trash. I don't know who had been bringing him food or how he had been surviving, but he clearly hadn't been out of this recliner in a long time. And we get to the house, and the firemen are standing at the door, just gagging and dry heaving from the smell. And I looked at my partner that I was working with, and I said, well, I think the best option here is to use a big canvas tarp to carry him out of the house because there's no way he could walk. So I ended up getting behind him, standing on the arms of the recliner, lifting him straight up so we could get this tarp underneath him. And in the process, I got smeared all over with feces. And so my partner, as a joke, taped some bandages over me. And then when we got to the hospital, he told everyone that I had a gunshot wound. But the thing about that call, and he still talks about it almost every time I see him. I gained a lot of respect from him by being willing to wade in to an unpleasant situation and grin and bear it and do what needed to be done. Number 10, give people their humanity back. You may not come across them as often as I do, but you will come across people who find themselves in pretty embarrassing situations. And I think just the reality is that in many ways our world dehumanizes people and strips them of their dignity. And it's very embarrassing. And I find that you can bring a lot of resolution to those situations by just very calmly and collectively helping people and not making a big deal out of it and helping them regain their dignity. Number 11, show God's love impartially. The world today is so reciprocal. It's tit for tat. We respond to people based on how they treat us all the time. And that's our first temptation too. And I think it's just so key that we break that cycle and that we pour extra love on the people who who the world would say least deserves it. Number 12, be extravagantly generous. I may wade into some hot water here. There's a lot of focus today on self-care and boundaries. And I think there's value to that discussion. I'm not discounting that, but I guess my heart is don't be afraid to be stretched in service. And again, balancing truths here. I mean, don't neglect your family and your primary responsibilities, but I find that serving is not as draining as when I'm focused on myself and my problems. And I think that as we serve, the Lord gives us more resources. He fills us up. Food for thought. Number 13, pursue excellence. Do your very best for people. Give them your attention, give them your best effort. During COVID, one morning, we made a call, and I think this gentleman was about 95 years old, lived at home with his wife, limited mobility. They had a round-the-clock caretaker, and he had experienced some stroke-like symptoms. They were basically resolved by the time we got there. And I spent the better part of an hour, maybe more, with his daughter, who was his medical power of attorney. She was in New Jersey, or somewhere back east. And her number one desire was that her parents not be displaced, not go into the hospital. And this was very early in COVID, where we were very concerned about exposures. And she said, you know, they'd lived a good life. They didn't want anything drastic done. Even if he had a stroke, they would probably decline any type of aggressive treatment. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time understanding what her treatment priorities were. And then, of course, I had to talk to my supervisors and sell them on the plan of action. And everyone agreed that it was reasonable. And she thanked me a lot for taking the time to really try to do the best thing for them in that situation. It certainly took a lot more energy and a lot more documentation and communication and phone calls. But give people your best effort. Be humble. I think this is just so crucial. Like I said, there's a lot of egos in the world, and it's just a killer to relationships. And it ego will hinder your effectiveness more than a lot of things. And I find that most conflicts can be, if not resolved, at least minimized when I humbly take responsibility for my part of the mess and choose to respond in humility versus defensiveness and fighting to be understood. It hurts to be misunderstood. But I don't always have to be right. And God can deal with it. He's big enough to carry it. I don't know what your experience is, but prayers for humility, I find, have never yet been unanswered. That is something that God's been very faithful in delivering. Number 15, be genuine. The world is full of fakes and masks. And we're guilty of it too often, I think. I think a huge part of it is just being comfortable in your own skin, understanding what your identity is and being secure in that. It was surprising to me when I was going through my turmoil at work and a number of colleagues wrote character reference letters for me. One of the first and most frequent words people used to describe me was genuine. And it was kind of surprising. I wouldn't have necessarily thought of that being the first thing that people would say. But I credit the work of God in taking me through a number of difficult experiences and helping me understand who I am as his child, and the security that I had in that. Number 16, kind of continuing the thought, know who you are and always strive to be growing in your understanding of the person that God has made you to be. I don't want to pick a big fight with the song Channels Only. I appreciate the thought, and I understand what the writer is getting at, but I think that we are more than just an empty conduit, if you will. God has invested so much in creating you with your personality, your giftings, your abilities. He has sustained you through a lot of experiences, and he has brought you to the place you are today. You are the product of so much. And so I think you need to allow that, embrace who you are as a person, and allow that to color the way that you show God's love to others. Don't apologize for who you are. Always be growing, but be appreciative of the person that God has created you to be, and seek to understand how that colors the way that you serve others. We made it through 16. Those are some of my musings. I would entertain any questions or comments that any of you have. Harry.
Sometimes your values as a Christ follower were at odds with the expectations of your employer, and how did you deal with that?
I don't know that I would say there was a lot of direct conflict. Probably more peer pressure and common expectations. I mean, the one thing that I would highlight is, especially when I was a newer employee, I got a lot of flack for the amount of time and energy I put into taking care of our frequent flyers, the homeless, and the, you know, people would say, well, he's just a drunk. You know, he's called every day this week. You know, why are you going to all the effort? But again, trying to give people a clean slate and treat them well, you know, whether it's the first time I met them or the 10th. Those are the types of things where those competing values come to play. Every day. Yeah. It was the privilege of a lifetime, and I have a great job now. It provides for us very well. Schedule's a little more flexible, but I think one of the things that I miss the most is just the sense of mission. we were a small band of brothers taking care of the city, and now I work in a building with 3,000 people, and I'm kind of one cog in a big machine, and so, but trying to do what I can to show Jesus where I'm at. Arlen, then Gary.
Kind of big, and I can go address it, but heard you talk often about how broken the system was down there.
Mm-hmm.
What do we as Christ followers do when systems like that are clearly getting in the way of what should be happening?
So, my perspective is that that government is ill-equipped to deal with societal ills. I mean, that's going to be my baseline, regardless of the issue we're talking about. And I think the only thing that really makes a difference is when Christ followers invest a lot of time sacrificially in walking beside people who are trapped in addiction or homelessness or poverty, and it is slow work, and it's costly, but that's my heart. I think that's really the only long-term way. How to fix the healthcare system. I'm sure there's a role for believers there too, but it's just tough. You know, the mission of caring for people has really been co-opted by the profit motive, even in nonprofit organizations, unfortunately. But, Gary?
Well, this is more of an observation than a question, unless somebody else helps me out. But sounds like you got some training and went to the School of Life and learned a lot of lessons in human psychology.
I find people to be fascinating. I really do. And I think, you know, psychology may not be your jam, but understanding how people think and function and relate, anything you can learn about that is just going to benefit you in so many ways. And admittedly, I haven't done a lot of formal study or training, but yeah, there's a lot that came along the way. Paul.
You said the jury was still out on your present job, and you have a few comments to make about your experience has been as a Christ follower. You've been there now how long?
Almost, it'll be 2 years in July. I have had opportunities to visit with people and have significant conversations. One lady that I talked to for quite a while about her situation, and it was a pretty sad one. At the end, she said, You must have gone through a lot of pain to be so wise at so young an age. But, yeah. The nursing is a worthy occupation. I mean, hear me. It is. It is just the time management and the juggling of so many different needs all the time. I probably would be better at it if I was a young mother, but my skill set is more accustomed to taking care of one or two patients at a time, and so it's very challenging. But again, most of these principles very much apply. I mean, people feel caught up in a system that doesn't listen to them very well and doesn't focus on what's important to them, and they feel lost in the shuffle, and they don't always feel like they're shown very much compassion. Nathan?
Do you have tips for discerning when someone actually has more to say, needs more to listen, maybe that would normally be appropriate in that
sense? Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's... I don't know. I probably enjoy conversations more than some do, and usually the people that have something on their mind are happy to start the conversation, but for people that seem troubled and withdrawn, I think the approach that has worked well for me is to just sit down and start a bit of a relaxed conversation and see where it goes, and ask open-ended questions. What do you mean by that? Can you explain that a little more? But yeah, it's dynamic. Well, I appreciate your attention and just encourage you that the needs around us are just immense. People are dealing with a lot of heartache, broken relationships. Even people, you know, I've worked with a lot of what we would call disadvantaged folks, but even people that seem very high functioning and successful, they struggle. I think cultivating a friendly, open posture towards others, taking genuine interest in them, opens the door to more significant conversations. So let's be of service and represent Christ's will. Have a song.